I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The A-List Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for checking in with the A-List Podcast. I'm Kwani Lunish, joined by Ashrod Blakely and Gary Washburn. And it's a good day because we decided to record on the day that Jaylen Brown and the Celtics finally came to an agreement. 5 years, $304 million contract. That's the richest NBA contract so far. But the first question we have to ask, because that's what a lot of fans were wondering, why did it take so long? So what do you two think?
Listen here. All right. Jaylen, how can I put this? Jaylen's a grown ass man. And Jaylen knows what that brick was going to look like. And so if you know what the brick's going to look like and you know that it's going to get worked out, why would you rush? Especially if you had things that you already were planning to do. It's not like Jaylen had this deadline that was coming up real close and he got to figure out how to get it done. Even when it's done now, he still had like several weeks in which he could have worked something out if he didn't get it done now. I think Jaylen just realized that, look, I got this to do. I'm going to be in Spain. I'm going to be doing some other things. And when I'm done, I'll get it done. And he did. I think the biggest thing that they needed to work through, I think, was a lot of minor details as far as the length, what the trade kicker looked like. Is there a no trade clause? Those are the kind of things that I think they had to work through and work out. But I don't think there was this long laundry list of things that Jaylen absolutely had to have, which is why I think that once they sat down and started just looking at how to structure the deal, they knew that it was going to get done pretty quick. And so, again, it's not as fast as folks would have liked. But what happens in the NBA or any other profession, it is as fast as people would like it to be. It got done in, I think, a pretty reasonable amount of time, considering Jaylen had a lot of other stuff going on in the offseason that had nothing to do with basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of the details, like Sharon said, to negotiate trade kicker, no player option, what the money was going to be like. And I also think they just need to sit down in Boston, maybe not in Vegas, when everything is happening, and just hammer it out without some of the other stuff. But obviously, in Vegas, the Celtics are still trying to handle, Marcus had just gotten traded, and Grant Williams' situation was trying to clear up and all that. So they got all that cleared up. Jaylen went to Spain for 4 or 5 days, came back, obviously made an appearance Friday at a fundraiser, kind of a community event with the mayor, and kind of you just knew then, okay, like he's back, he's here to hammer this out. And it took a day. I think they started talking on Monday, what I was told. So it took a day plus to hammer it out. He got his bag. Now there's no more. Does Jaylen like Boston? He hates it here. He wants out. All the rhetoric that's been going on about his feelings. I'm sure he's comfortable here. His family is here. And I'm sure he's ready to make this a long-term home. Now we'll see. You know, I'm hearing, you know, people, oh, well, you know, he'll never play out the length of the contract. Like, you know, who knows if that's going to happen? You know, he's under control of the franchise for another 6 seasons. And in the final year of that contract, he makes $69 million. So even in 6 years from now, that's going to be difficult to move that contract, right? Now, nothing's impossible. And Damian Lillard's going to be making $60 million in the final year, and he might get traded. So it's nothing's impossible. But this was a serious commitment from the Celtics, right? And it's a serious commitment from Jaylen to say, hey, I want to be here. I want to be in green and white. I want to see my number 7 eventually retired along with Jason, you know, because Jason's back's coming next year, and everybody knows that it won't be as suspenseful as this one. We all know that's going to happen.
Where's the pen?
Yeah, that's going to happen pretty fast when he opts out. he opts out his final year and then signs a new 5-year deal for $320+ million. So I think it's all settled now. But now Celtic fans can kind of relax now. Do you want some more additions to the roster? Of course. Do you want to figure out who's going to play point guard? Of course. There's still some things to take care of. But the biggest kind of thing hanging over this franchise over the last month is now over. And I said they can move on. Now you got your big three. Now you can make some plans for, you know, you can sell your season tickets. You can put Jalen and Jason together on the season ticket packages and on the promotions, and you know Jalen's going to be here long term. And so I think it's a good day. As we said last week, you did not want this to bleed into August. You did not want people to, but they knocked it out. Good job by the Celtics. Good job by Jalen's folks. And now you can move forward.
And another part of that commitment you mentioned, you talk about the way he's been involved in the community. The Globe reported that he requested, instead of a formal press conference, to announce that his extension would be legitimize it, essentially. He wanted it to be announced that his Juice Bridge program, which is the program that he's created at MIT to help students within the city of Boston. So that just goes further to highlight the fact that he's not only committed to this team, he's still committed to the community and the work that he's already done here so far. But overall, when you look at this deal, who do you think gets the biggest winning pie, so to speak, when it comes to who benefits the most? Is it Jalen? Is it the Celtics? Or is it just fans overall?
What you got, Gary?
Jalen got $304 million. Like, I think Jalen won this one. And I'm not saying there's a winner and a loser. Like, I don't think the Celtics lost. Sure. Jalen's the highest paid player in the NBA. Like, you know, I mean, we all would love to be the highest paid player in our profession, a person in our profession, right? Jalen's, and it might last like a 2 weeks.
But it still counts.
You can always say, I'm the highest paid player. You know, he can always, with anybody in the league, he can go down and play big bank, take little bank. Like, he can, that's a source of pride. Now, I know, knowing Jalen, that's not as important as being a better player, better man, a contributor to the community, and all of the above. But this is what happens. Like, people are complaining about it when I understand. But remember, like, in a smaller scale, 7 years ago, remember free agency in 2016? Evan Turner got $75 million. Luol Deng got $75 million. Timothy Mozgov got $64 million. Aging Joakim Noah got $72 million from the Knicks. Like, sometimes it just happens to be your time, right? And this is the time for Jalen. Jalen just benefited. He was born in the right year. He needs to thank his parents, okay? He needs to thank his decision to leave school after 1 year, and also thank himself for going to Cal.
So leave it for 1 year, though. That's the most important. He realized that there's nothing he can in school, so let's be out.
Us Cal folks thank him for going to Cal, but thank him. It's just his time. And some guys, folks, benefit from, you know, just the happenstance of being born at the right time, coming to the league at the right time. Look at those free agents. If you were a free agent in 2015, you didn't get no pay like that. Free agent 2016, when the cap money needed to be spent, you got Evan Turner was never the same player. Nothing against Evan, but Evan Turner retired off that contract. So did Luol Deng, and so did all them dudes. Did you see any productive basketball from Evan Turner, Luol Deng, Timmy Mozgov, or Joakim Noah after they signed those deals? They were like, deuces. I got my wealth. So I'm not saying Jalen's going to be the same way. Jalen's going to play hard. But sometimes you just end up running into a good luck situation where it's your time. It's your turn, okay? Look, people want to talk about LaMelo Ball got $250 million. LaMelo Ball on the level of a big-time all-star player? He could be, but he just got $250. Tyrese Haliburton just got $260. So it's just their year. And next year will be better. The TV deal kicks in. So get used to these guys getting paid. And just wait. I'm telling y'all, Wembanyama is going to be the first $500,000 player. $500,000,000, sorry, not $500,000,000. Shoot, that ain't nothing. $500,000,000 dollar player. Wait till if Wembanyama works out the way he's supposed to in 3 years, and he signs that rookie, I mean, and then he gets another one like where Jason is going to be next year. Wait till Wembanyama comes up on that like extension. Let's see how much he gets. So this is the way. This is the new NBA. Everyone's winning. I was having a discussion with someone from the Player Association, a current player who's, and we were talking about 10 years ago how David Stern and Billy Hunter, which is the president of the Player Association, and then Commissioner Stern were going at each other's throats. It was ugly. Teams were claiming poverty. Everything was terrible. Shoot, 12 years later, it is the roaring 20s. You know, this is it's happy days are here again. So this is the way it is. Jalen just happened to benefit from being at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Me and I was on the Cedric Maxwell podcast, and actually we were talking about that, about how Cedric, and you know, said he's thinking, you know what? My mom was born in the wrong
day. My check.
Exactly.
Where my reparations? They want reparations. He wants reparations.
I mean, Cedric, I mean, if we're keeping it 100, I mean, in this day and age of the NBA, Cedric is like a $20-25 million a year player with a minimum. Easy. And he knows this.
I know he meant.
But the thing about Jalen, as far as like who wins, who can claim victory, there are no losers. I mean, the Celtics win because they have a young core that's going to be around for a while, that they have a significant amount of control over keeping them together. You've got a fan base who knows right now who your core group is and knows damn well that core group is going to be competing for a championship for years to come. And last but damn sure not least, you got to talk about Jalen. I mean, there's like generational wealth. Then there's like his brick. His kids are good. And the thing that I love about Jalen, and you guys kind of touched on it a little bit, is that although he's got this significant amount of just multi-generational wealth at his disposal, he's not going to be one of those cats who just hoards that money. He's figuring out ways to make an impact in areas that will benefit society on a much more global scale than just fat in his pockets. Now, he's smart enough to make some investments and make sure his money make a little more money for him. That's just being intelligent. But understanding the need to invest in not only businesses, but in intellectual capital. He's one of the few players that is very intentional about that. When you talked about the press conference that he's going to have, there was thought put into how am I going to roll out to the public this deal? And his thought took him to making sure that it had a certain intellectual investment component to it. And I respect the hell out of Jalen for that. Because to me, that's one of my biggest pet peeves with a lot of these athletes, that they don't recognize the need and understand that you need to be more than just a basketball player who makes money. You need to figure out a way to make an impact in other ways that benefits society and don't necessarily benefit your pockets in the process. And Jalen is really good about thinking of different ways to do that. So he's one of those guys that you look at that $304 million bag and you think like, damn, that's a lot of money. But he's the kind of guy that you feel comfortable having that type of financial freedom. Whereas there's some other players who, you know, you look at them and like, damn. Oh, man, I don't know about this dude. This might get ugly. They might regret giving that guy that money. Jalen's not one of those guys, obviously.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Gary, you kind of started talking about this, but how would you two say that this deal affects the Jalen and Jason pairing? Like you mentioned, they won't waste any time when it comes to Jason Tatum's deal, but what do you think this just says about the future of the franchise?
Well, I mean, they've put their stake in Jason and Jalen, and now you got to get a championship out of it. The next step, they should be motivated. And I think you know, Jason and Jalen can play together. I think we've seen that. Okay, now they've got to be both at a better level, a higher level next year. I saw the odds come out, and Jason's like fifth overall, plus 900 for you FanDuel folks to win the MVP next year. Well, Jason, as I've said before, has got to take next year as a personal campaign to not only win the MVP, but to lead his team to the finals. And Jalen has got to make up for that game seven against Miami and be in the lab, time to go to the lab, Jalen, working with the kids. Hey, work with the kids half the day, the next half, whether it's whatever, a dark gym at midnight, work on your game, get it back in the lab. Get to where you are at a higher level. The same with Jason. Get to, you know, have your fun, hang out with Deuce, go to your events, be seen. Jason's living the life of 25, but get in the lab and both come back for training camp with a full season now of Joe Mazzulla with Porzingis and got to figure out what the guard situation, but come back like, okay, this is us. This is our year. Bleep everybody else. I don't want to hear about no Denver. I want to hear about no Milwaukee. I want to hear about no Miami, no Philly, no Lakers. Like, this is our year. Y'all got to be on a campaign. That's how I look at it. So their relationship should be closer than ever. Jalen got the bag. Jason know he getting the bag. Jason ain't losing no sleep over his contract issue next year. So both of them are going to be highly paid, highly rewarded. And now the next step, if you're Jason and Jalen, is getting your number lifted in the rafters. Now y'all got to make some history. It's been 15 years since they won a championship. You want to be Garnett? You want to be Pierce? You want to be Ray Allen? You want to be these guys? You want to be, you know, Max? Max's number is up there. Yeah, you make more money than Max, but all Max got to do is point to the rafters at the Garden and go, where you at? Where your jersey at?
Yeah.
It could be coming, but win a championship, and it will be guaranteed. So now you're working on your personal legacy, your team legacy. Now you got paid. Jason's like, the money's set. Like, no more, I'm working hard. I'm to get paid. I'm trying to get my lat neck. This is your best contract you'll get for Jalen. And maybe the next one, who knows? And Jason, we don't know. He could play another year, you know, a few years, many years after this next contract, and maybe he gets rewarded too. But this is it. Y'all got paid. You got your bag. Now it's time to lock in and be all-time great Celtics, lead this team to championship.
Tatum was at an event where they asked him, which would you prefer, a max contract or a championship? And the interviewer obviously didn't know much about Jason. And so Jason kind of grinned and said, I already got a max contract, so the answer would be a championship. Yeah. And I point that out because players that young aren't really geared to coming up the way Jason has. Jason is already established as one of the best in the game. You look at all the different mile markers in his career. He's the first to do this as a Celtic, the first to do that as a Celtic. He is clearly on a path to be one of, if not the greatest Celtic to ever play the game. That's not a hype. That's not hyperbole. That's the trajectory that he has been on since he has been in the NBA. However, that void, no championships, you have to fill that void in order to enter that room. Larry Bird, Cedric Maxwell, Bill Russell, you can talk about having numbers with them, but you're not going to enter the conversation to be with them until you get a chip. And he knows that. So it's not about the bag. It's not about your boy getting his bag because he got that now. It's about you handling your business as the best player on one of the best teams and put another banner up there. That's a different kind of pressure that only you as a player would understand that. Only you would know what it feels like that literally it's a failure on your part and your team's part if you don't be the last team standing. They're one of the few teams that has that type of pressure. He's one of the few players who has lived that pressure the last couple of years, but it's even more pronounced now because there's no excuses for you not getting it done. You have to be that great. And again, we can go on and on about just how the economics of the NBA have changed, where there really isn't a middle class anymore. That class is shrinking. It's kind of like society. It's kind of like our own country's economy, where you've got the upper class, you've got the lower class, and that middle class is shrinking by the day. It's the same thing in the NBA. So if you're Jason, who is part of the upper echelon, upper class, you got to carry your franchise. You got to embrace that. And, and I don't want to hear about a sore wrist. I don't want to hear about an achy ankle. Excuses, while they may be valid, doesn't change the fact that your season is based on winning a championship, and anything other than that is a failure. I don't care how you want to slice it. I don't care how you want to put lipstick on that pig. It's still going to be a pig if you don't win a championship. So I'm really curious to see if he's going to step up his mental game, because physically, in terms of talent, he's there. But is he going to be more of a outward leader? Is he going to get on guys when they're not getting it done? Is he going to put the team on the back more nights than not, when Jalen may not have it going on and Malcolm's not giving him much and Porzingis is, you know, having trouble getting shots up? Is he going to just say, ride my back, fellas, I got y'all tonight? Is he going to get to that point? Because he has the talent to do that. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind and the minds of most that he can do that. But has he matured to the level of doing that? And I don't know. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. And I think that's the concern that many have going forward with this team. It's not about talent. It's about mental toughness. Do you have the mental fortitude to push yourself, push your body above and beyond when you may not be at the top of your game? Because we've seen many games where Jason doesn't really play well. And then you look at the final stats. He's got like 27 points, 8-9 rebounds, 2-3 assists. I mean, granted, he went 9-for-29 shooting, but he still found ways to get buckets and make an impact. He has to be able to do that and win when it matters. So I'm like I said, I'm eager as hell to see how this thing plays out, because there is nothing that he can do other than win a championship to satisfy this fan base. Nothing.
So to further add to the original question, do you think the contract itself will finally kill the noise when it comes to the break up the Jays conversation that we've heard all year round?
Hell no. They're still going to say it won't make any. It make even less sense though. When you look at the deal that Jalen has, and you know the deal that Tatum's going to get. I mean, those two guys are going to be caring about, you know, more than $500 million in combined salary, I think they're there now with what's happening. So. Yeah. The idea that they can't work together, you're basically saying, Celtics, y'all really don't know what y'all are doing. Because y'all paying $500 million for these two players. And the Celtics are like, but wait a minute. We're a title contender now and for the foreseeable future. We're spending a lot of money, but we've got some pretty damn good players. And they're not old. They're in their mid-20s. And typically, guys, and Gary, you've been around the game long enough, longer than me and Kwani. It's a little ages. Yeah, a little ageism joke. Players typically peak when they're in their late 20s, like 28, 29. That's when they're like at the top of the game. And so based upon that, these guys probably have another 2 or 3 years to keep getting better. And that, if you're a Celtics fan, is incredibly encouraging, because you've been a title contender for the last 2-3 years. And you got theoretically a window where you're going to be in the mix for at least another 2 or 3 years. So again, once they reach that peak, then players tend to level out. So you're probably going to be getting great Jalen and JB play for the next 5-6 years before there's any signs of a noticeable dipping. And even that's questionable. So bottom line is this: you've got a situation in Boston where your window is going to be open for a while. It's going to be the trick and challenge is for management to figure out the right side dishes to put around your main course. And you're going to have to do that through drafting. You're going to have to do that through trades. You're going to have to do it through cheap labor. I mean, if we're being honest and keeping it 100, you're going to have to get some free agent on a minimum deal who plays like, you know, a borderline all-star at some point, or a starter. That's how you're going to be able to win at the highest level, because your main two guys make too much damn money and they ain't taking no pay cuts no time soon, as they shouldn't. So I'm really looking forward to how to see this Celtics franchise evolve with these two guys as their core get it done type guys.
Yeah, I think the Celtics is something. This is something that now people are saying they had to do it, But I definitely think it was in their best interest. And remember, with the new CBA, you have to spend 90% of the cap before the season starts. That means you can't be like Oklahoma City and spend 60% and then take on a really bad, somebody's $35 million contract during the season to get to that 90% and you're good. Like, you got to spend money. Like, the way the players worked out the CBA is y'all going to pay us. And as Sherrod said, the middle class is shrinking. Like, you know, you've got guys, you know, like Malcolm Brogdon makes $21 million a year. That's kind of middle class, but now that's not all that much money in terms of the NBA, the grand scheme of the NBA. $20 million per season is a quality NBA player, but not a great NBA player. We just saw Fred VanVleet get $40 million a year from the Houston Rockets. We just saw Dylan Brooks, who was told by Memphis, you know, see your ass, we don't want to see your ass. Yeah, we don't want to see your ass in the vicinity. Okay. We saw
get out of here, boy. Yeah,
in any circumstances.
Like Marty Marr, get to stepping. We saw him get $22 million from the Houston Rockets. Yeah. You know, he got a raise and he got fired on his day off from the Grizzlies, right? He's Craig. He was stealing boxes. And it's like, and so to me, you look at it, this is the way the NBA is going to be. Teams are going to have to spend money. Even the bad teams, even the Charlottes. That's why Charlotte gave LaMelo $250. That's why Indiana, because you're going to have to spend your high money on your best players. That's what it's going to be, and it's going to squeeze out the middle class. Unfortunately, the middle man's going to take it. They're going to get it from in this situation because that's what the Celtics did. We have two premium players. We got to spend most of our money on that, and we got, like Sherrod said, we got to figure out what to do with the rest of the roster. So now you got one dude making, you know, next year it'll be a little bit easier. Jalen's still making 30. Jason's making 33, 34. Porzingis making 36. And Malcolm making 21, and that's why they had to get rid of Grant, unfortunately, you know, because you just didn't want to have it. Those penalties from that second apron, if you're there three out of every 4 years, you lose your draft pick, regardless of what it is, go to the bottom of the first round. Like, you start really feeling the heat when you get to that second apron in consecutive years. I think it's three out of every four-year period. So the Celtics got to be careful financially. That's why they signed Al Horford, their nice $10 million deal. They still had Robert Williams making about 12. That's easy money at this point. Now, 12 million 15 years ago was a grip. Now, that's a nice little sound. That's okay. We got you.
That's lunch money.
You can't. That's enough money for teams aren't going to be tripping off of, right? But for Grant, unfortunately, he just got squeezed out of the salary thing, the new CBA. He wasn't able to, you know, because the Celtics thinking long term with him, and Dallas had that money for him. So good for Grant, but this is what's going to happen. It's going to be the new NBA. So get used to it, and I think the Celtics financially are going to be okay. I think there's a lot of things that are going to, like, this puts a lot of emphasis that we talked about in the next couple of years. Like, this team coming up, because salaries are going to raise, you're going to make some more tough decisions. You're going to have to bank more on younger players who, that's why they didn't get rid of Peyton Pritchard. Peyton don't make no money yet, right? Like, that's why you're going to have to rely on, you know, Hoshea Brissett and all these, Sherrod's guy, you know, Delano Banton, like, you looking at guys there, they you have to, yeah, Syracuse, we get it, Sherrod. you're looking at players that are gonna have to outperform their deals, that are gonna be paid below market value. Like, they're gonna rely a lot on Hoshea Brissett this year, and he ain't making much money. The same with Banton, like that, you have to get those type of guys. You're going to have to get young guys. And it was Brad Dunn, very intelligent. Young guys, you pluck them off other teams that are looking for a chance, right? Because someone would have done that probably with Peyton Pritchard if they didn't have, you know, if Peyton was a free agent. You take young guys off other teams that you've seen and go, okay, he ain't making no money, and he's ready to break out. So you roll the dice that these players are ready to have breakout seasons, that O'Shea can fill that role of Grant because he's more athletic than Grant now. Can he rebound, defend, all that like Grant? Not sure. We'll have to see. But those are the players they got to put faith in. So this is the new NBA, folks. So, I mean, if you're looking at, for guys that make $20, $25 million, the Celtics are going to be like, no, we got about 10 for you. You know, they're going to make sure that they've taken care of their two guys, and they just extended Porzingis, $30 million a year after this coming year. So now their big three is set, like Sherrod said, for the next 3 years, and we'll see what happens. You are annoying.
All right. Well, we talked about, you mentioned the NBA's middle class is slowly shrinking. So what impact would you say that Jalen's signing will have on the rest of the roster overall?
You're going to have a lot of, at best, average players on your squad because you can't afford anything more than that. They are going to have to hit a home run, eyes closed, where they just take a swing at a guy and they hope to make contact and they just knock it out the park. That's, to me, they're going to have to get that, have that kind of fortune. I don't know if they've got anybody on the roster that kind of falls to that category right now. But again, once we get into training camp and get into the season, guys may emerge. You know, you think back to when they made the trade for Isaiah Thomas at the 11th hour at the trade deadline. They were just hoping he'd come in, give him some points off the bench, spell Marcus Smart, and keep the train moving. And then Marcus gets hurt. Isaiah becomes a starter. Marcus is healthy. Marcus ain't started no more because Isaiah becomes a two-time All-Star. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to need that kind of fortune in order for this to really work out. Because, again, Jalen's contract makes it difficult for them to add players of significance only because of the size of the contract and the lack of flexibility it gives them beyond him and Jason. But again, to me, it puts a greater onus on him to be more impactful. It's we're not breaking any news or having any, you know, headline out there when we say Jalen's got to handle the ball better. He has to become better with his handle. That has the ability to nullify some of those gaps that they have in that bench. And that's what I think Jalen and Jason have to become better at, is figuring out ways to impact the game, to take some of the pressure off that second unit, because that second unit can't be as good as the Celtics would ideally want it to be, because the talent isn't there that they can afford to make it significantly better. Again, they're going to have to hit some home runs, eyes closed, with some guys, which, again, is always possible, but highly unlikely to happen. And when that's the case, you fall back on your two core or three pillars, really, if you throw in Porzingis. Again, it's a good situation to have, because if those are your big three, you look at them compared to the top three at most teams, they're as good or better than most of them. But at the same time, you still have a whole lot behind them if one of those guys, you know, is out for whatever reason. So I'm curious to see how the Celtics are going to replenish that back end of the lineup, because that's one of those keys to finding success, particularly in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the rest of the roster is gonna be faith. Like, you look at the Denver Nuggets, they lost Bruce Brown, who got pizzayed, paid $45 million over 2 years. Boston's own Bruce Brown, yeah. And then they lost Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. They didn't replace either. They're depending on rookie Christian Braun, who just come off his good rookie year, and then a kid named Peyton Watson. Who kind of spending a lot of time in G League, they're pinning on those two guys to step up and fill those roles, right? They, you know, like, you're going to have to rely a lot on younger players during this new era. So Jordan Walsh becomes a factor. His development becomes important, maybe even this year, for this team. You know, now you can put J.D. Davidson and Jay Scrub, our guy from the junior college ranks, who's now on a two-way contract, put them in Maine. But you got to develop Jordan. You're gonna need more out of Sam Hauser, right? You're gonna need Peyton to step up, and then we'll see what happens if they add another big. If they decide they want to bring Blake Griffin back, I know Champagne and for what's the big man from Vanderbilt? Oh boy, the White's the center number 40.
The fact that you're I'm not going to help you because he's not going to be relevant. So keep moving.
Summer league roster.
No, I'm talking about.
Keep moving, Gary. You don't need him.
They're a non-guaranteed contract.
What do you mean, Cornette?
Cornette, you're a little Cornette.
The white boy.
Thank you, Kwani.
Could have said that.
I literally forgot who he was.
Me too.
Let's move forward. Okay. Let's move forward.
I'm sorry.
Luke Cornette and Schiapagny are both on non-guaranteed deals. Yeah. So they got to figure out whether they want to bring some guys on some minimums. And there's guys out there. There's going to be plenty of guys. There's Kelly Oubre. There's Christian Wood. I mean, everybody got flaws now. This is not the prom. This ain't a beauty pageant. Not everybody looking good.
I can't.
Austin Rivers. There's guys out there with some. Everybody out there got some issues. But the question is, can they work out for you on a minimum deal? And the Celtics are going to have to figure out whether one of those guys, let's say, can help them. Another big, replacement big. Hernan Gomez from New Orleans. There's guys out there that are looking for contracts that are going to have to accept league minimums, which is Celtics have plenty of those, and they're going to have to fill their roster with those guys. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with Cornette, or they're going to invite him to camp and see if he can make the team, or Schiapagny. But to me, it all depends on the younger guys. You know, this is what happens. Unfortunately, when some of your first round picks don't work out or you don't take a lot of first round picks, you're going to have to rely on guys, pluck them from other organizations. The Banton move was interesting to me just in terms of like they've seen him for years playing at the end of the bench in Toronto, coming in at the end of games, and they like something about him, right? And they kind of plucked him from the Raptors. And I saw Raptors writers saying, damn, the Raptors sat there and developed him for 2 years and then just lose him to a rival. In their division. And then, you know, the same with Brissett. Like, you know, did anybody even know O'Shea was a free agent? Not really. I mean, wasn't people.
Well, Sherrod, of course.
Right. My fault.
Did anybody know?
The Syracuse free agent notifications on the phone.
Orange alert.
Yeah, we get them alerts like July 1st. Yeah, that's right.
All right.
These lowbrow Syracuse players are all free agents. So anyway, the Celtics have to be intelligent in that sense. And I think that they picked two good guys that can help them. And then Jordan Walsh looks like he's going to be someone that's going to make the big team. And they might send him to Maine to get some seasoning if he's not playing. But they got to figure it out. And some of these guys, Payton, Hauser, they got to step up. You know, guys have to step up. And if you need to get a – you know, like I thought they should have signed, tried to go after Pat Bev. They tried to go after, they didn't go after Montrezl Harrell, our friend Montrez. He ended up re-signing with Philadelphia. But there's a bunch of guys out there still, as we approach August, who are going to be looking for guaranteed deal, 1 year minimum, and they'll take it. The Celtics are very intelligent to wait, and we'll see what happens in August and you know, and who they bring in for in the camp. But I think that they have 17 on their roster now, if you include the two-way guys, so they have three spots to fill for training camp. So I think, Kwani, the salaries just put more emphasis on the franchise, but all franchises too. Like, you know, I said, look, I just pointed out the Nuggets. Nuggets lost two key contributors and did not replace. They're going to replace them with guys that were in their system that they hope step up. And that's going to have to be the answer for the Celtics when Nuggets are paying Jokic and Murray, and Michael Porter Jr., you know, and Aaron Gordon. So they're paying four guys. So they're like, hey, we can't afford to bring in no $10 million free agent. We got to hope that the dudes that we've worked with and tutored and all that, you know, and brought up and cultivated are ready to step up. So the Celtics, the same position.
Well, one of the young people that you mentioned is Peyton Pritchard, and he was actually selected to the USA select team. And as a result, he is actually eligible to serve as a replacement on the FIBA World Cup team. And they're going to start meeting on August 3rd in Las Vegas. But what do you two think will, what is the benefit of him not only participating, but how can it benefit the Celtics in the long run, if so?
I think Peyton would benefit from just getting a little confidence boost if he plays well with that group. I mean, you got guys like Cade Cunningham and some of the young on-the-rise stars that are on that team. And if he can hold his own with those guys, I think that's a huge confidence boost for him, because I thought Peyton, you know, he didn't get as many opportunities I think he would have liked last season. But I think part of that had to do with the fact that when he got in the game, often he just didn't play with great confidence. But I thought as the season progressed and his opportunities became fewer and farther between, he made the most of those opportunities when they came. And I'd like to see him build off of that with a strong showing against some good competition. This is not that pro-am league that he dropped 95 in a couple summers ago. This team is a little bit better than that. Exactly. So, I mean, I want to see him play better. I want to see him hold his own against better competition. Because y'all remember when he dropped that 95, he came back and he was not the same.
He wasn't.
But the summer league squad, it's just like, damn. Really? But Peyton, I mean, this is a good summer. This is a good opportunity for him. I think it's a definite confidence boost for him to even be added to the team. This is a guy that, again, the Celtics, you know, didn't really seem to have a tremendous amount of confidence and faith. And more than anything else, he just got caught in the numbers game. I mean, are you going to play ahead of Malcolm Brogdon? Are you going to play ahead of Marcus Smart? No, it's not going to happen. You know, and then you got, you know, Derek White, who's playing a lot of, you know, both front court and back court, plus Tatum and Brown are being more, you know, ball initiators. So it's just like someone is going to be the collateral damage when all that stuff is going on. And Peyton, in many respects, was that. Now some of that logjam's cleared up. He's on a select team. Let's see what he can do there and see if he comes into camp feeling a little bit better about himself and actually have legitimate folks that he went at and he performed well against, as opposed to, you know, a bunch of Gary Washburns up in that pro-am league.
Oh, yo. I be locking fools down. What you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, 45 points later.
I mean, yeah, I think it's a good experience for him to get some international competition, to play against a lot of his peers, a lot of guys that are a little bit ahead of him in the NBA hierarchy in terms of guys that he probably was drafted with. And he can get that experience. And I think it's a good experience for Peyton. I mean, the Celtics had to decide what they want to do with Peyton Pritchard, right? First of all, he's eligible for an extension. I don't know if he'll get it, but if not, he'll be a restricted free agent.
They got no money. They broke.
Yeah, and he'll be like Grant Williams was this year. But they got to decide what to do with him. I think he's got skills. He's got talent. But you got to give him more playing time, and you got to let him make some mistakes out there. I think under Brad, it worked out. That first year under Brad, everybody was pleasantly surprised. Then Ime just did not like him, did not play him a lot. And then last year was kind of the same thing, and he wanted out. He admitted to me, like, I was upset I didn't get traded at trade deadline. And, you know,
people, I love that, by the way.
Yeah, people was, oh, he's a traitor, and, you know, get him out of here. Yeah. But
nah, he understands.
He wants to play. You know, and Peyton came out. The thing about Peyton is different from other guys is Peyton came out at 22. He was a 22-year-old rookie. Like, Peyton's like 26 now. Like, his time, he sees, like, listen, I gotta make it now.
Because, his window's closing in that sense.
Like, have you? Yeah. I don't know about y'all, but I saw some of the birth dates in the summer league of these players, and I saw 04. And I was like, yo,
it's weird.
Jordan Walsh, 04.
Mm-hmm.
04.
My youngest brother is 2000.
That was Kanye's like first album, right? Like, what?
I don't need to.
That was the year the Pistons won the title, Gary.
Yeah, like literally, Jordan Walsh is like, damn, I don't even remember Kanye. I was born. Like, what? Like, you know. Like, Ludacris and Kanye and freaking and Nelly were just banging in 50 Cent. If you look at the music back in 04, start shaking your head. Like, who, what?
Yo, those yesterday, our interns, we were playing 90s R&B to go up somewhere for work. And why did the two interns, both born in 1999, they were like, was this the music you grew up on? And I'm like, what the?
Exactly.
Like, how old do you think I am as a result?
Remember, Kwani, everybody is somebody's old head.
Look, I'm an old head now because 90s
yes,
R&B
yes.
is
you have reached old head status. We got to give you the bowling shirt. You're officially an old head.
I was so hurt.
Everybody is somebody's old head. So if you look at some of the birth dates on these young dudes coming into the league, 04. Okay. So they are 19 years old. Peyton's like 26. Like, okay, I got to make my bread now. I got to earn some money. I got to get a new contract. My time is now. So there's a sense of urgency for Peyton. He is not the young kid anymore, especially age-wise. So he's got to make it happen. So I think it's a great experience for him to play with his peers, play hard one-on-one against Cade Cunningham and those, you know, not only the games and all that, but the scrimmages and just the workout and the experience. Give him some, you know, international experience. I think it's good for him. And he can come back with confidence. Like Sherrod said, not after scoring 95 against, you know, some dudes who used to play at Portland Community College, but literally real NBA players that he can come back and say, hey, I fared well. I'm ready to help this team. Because he wants ball. He's got... No shade to Portland CC.
But all due respect.
All due respect to Portland CC. But
as he disrespects them.
And that school is expensive.
Yeah, go Portland CC.
Before aid, it's $22,000 a year.
What?
Before aid.
What school is that?
Portland Community College.
No, it's not. $22,000. For a community college?
Yeah, I just looked at college is
this? Is Beverly Hills Community College?
Is Beverly Hills Community College taking your money?
What is like housing, everything included, and a $100,000 job after you graduate included? What?
Right. Do I get a zip card with that? That's scholarship. Do I get a zip card?
Unlimited groceries or something.
Oh, goodness. What's going on here? Anyway. On that note, so I think it's good for Peyton to get out there, get his burn, come in with confidence, and play against his peers and take that next step because he's got a lot to lose, and so do the Celtics.
Well, that's all I had to talk about the Celtics. I imagine we'll get an update about this story, the Bronny James situation. I don't know if you two saw, you probably saw, he's in stable condition after suffering cardiac arrest during practice on Tuesday. So we don't really know more, but like NBA news wise, that was the only other thing that jumped out to me. I obviously hope that he's doing okay, but hopefully it's also nothing serious and just hope, you know, maybe just a spook or whatever the case is.
That's scary stuff. Particularly when you're talking about young athletes. And you know, I'm glad that whatever it is happened in an environment where there are people around that they could address it. And now they're starting to do the test, obviously, to see if there's more to it than just, a one-time incident, which is great from the standpoint of they're going to get some answers to what could have potentially been something that could have been far worse of an outcome if it wasn't detected now. So that's the silver lining in all this. And I know LeBron James on many levels is kind of a polarizing figure, but these are the times where none of that matters. I mean, however you feel about him, you want to see his son do well. You want to see him healthy and back to competing at the level he's accustomed to. Definitely, wishing the best for him, his family, his mama, because I know these people forget about mamas in these type of situations. They're the ones who, in many respects, from an emotional, engagement standpoint, are just devastated and freaking out about it. So shout out to Savannah and hope that she's, getting closer to being at peace with all that's going on with her son. So,
Yeah, I just want to say it's okay if he never plays basketball again. Like, it's okay if he has another calling in this world. If that, like his, because obviously his heart's going to be examined and, hopefully he can play this season. Like,
I don't care
if he ever plays another game again. I want Bronny James to be a productive citizen. If his calling by God is from somewhere else other than basketball court, then that's great. The good thing is, the wonderful thing is this got caught and that, and I'm writing a column for tomorrow these athletes are not invincible. We look at LeBron, we look at his father and think, he's a man of steel. And we look at these guys and they run up and down the court. But heart issues is very serious. And these guys are susceptible at times to heart issues. Look at, you know, look at DeMar Hamlin, and hopefully he can resume his NFL career. Obviously, it was a scary incident. But, you know, the great thing is that Bronny has a another chance, that this wasn't the end. You know, it could have been. Here's an 18-year-old kid we heard, and you see some of the, you know, guys, and you see, you know, cover high schools over the years, some high school kid fell out at practice, heat stroke, thing like, you know,
dehydration.
Lineman at the University of Maryland a few years ago. You know, we've heard of, you know, Corey Stringer from the Minnesota Vikings. Like, now that was like more heat related or whatever, but right. You know, the body has its limits. And, you know, I don't know if this is like, you know, God sending a message to Bronny to be like, okay, watch out. I don't know. I won't get all religious, but this is a good, maybe a warning for him, not a good thing, but I just want him to be healthy and sound and safe and maybe pursue his dreams. I'd love to see him on the basketball court.
Sure.
I'd love to see him play for USC. I'd love to see him play in the NBA 15, 20 years, but that might not be his calling. But I'm glad that he has a second chance. He can get healthy, get right, and maybe he can attend school when it starts at USC. And, you know, we can worry about basketball later. Because we all know, like, hey, it's tough to be a celebrity's kid. Some of these celebrity kids be acting a fool and acting out. And you know, Bronny's been a model citizen, done everything he's supposed to do to try to carve his own niche and have his own basketball career. So I'm just rooting for him. I hope he's okay, number one. Hope he can attend school when it starts and be just a regular student. And if basketball's in his plans, I hope he can ball out on the court eventually and they find out and get to the bottom of the issue and hopefully it never happens again. But if not, I just want him to be safe and okay, because Thursday is the 30th anniversary of Reggie Lewis's passing. You know, he passed away of a heart issue, heart attack at Brandeis University 30 years ago on Thursday. So that's not a stark reminder. Just don't push yourself. And sometimes it's not meant for you. That's it. We all still miss Reggie and miss his impact. So, you know, I just wanted to, that's all I want to say.
No, very well said. And thank you for sharing that. Make sure you guys check out the column that Gary mentioned. It should probably be out by the time you're listening to this. But as always, we appreciate you guys listening to the A-List podcast. As you know, we say this every week, the NBA never sleeps. So we'll be back next week for A'Shaun Blakely and Gary Washburn. I'm Kwani Lunis. This is the A-List podcast. Thank you for listening.
The CLNS Media Network is powered by FanDuel. Sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston and get in on the action with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed.